Hey, it's Chaz and AJ.
Hello.
Thank you for listening to our podcast.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoy it. And please subscribe, comment, share, do all those things that make us look good.
And be nice.
Thank you.
Jimmy Coplick, Live Nation Concert God on the show. Tomorrow is a very special day. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
Morning.
Good, thank you. Tomorrow
is the 50th anniversary of the Watkins Glen concert or festival, whatever you may want to call it.
Wow.
Nice.
The 50th.
50 years.
Yep, 50 years.
And someone's just getting home.
Well, some of the cars never made it. They're still out there in the field.
Oh, I want those cars.
Oh, that's true. You're so right. There are a bunch of cars that got stuck in the mud and people hitched home and they never came back and got the cars.
Man.
There are some really cool pictures of cars just out in the woods, and trees have grown around them. Now, these are 50-year-old trees.
Right, and you chance on a flatbed.
So it's a very weird scene to see a car, and you see all trees everywhere, and you're like, how did this car get there?
How did he park
there? But it's just been there so long.
Right.
50 years ago
wow.
tomorrow, one of the most famous concerts in the world. This came right after Woodstock?
Woodstock was 69. We were 73. Not age, years.
Right. Know, gotcha.
Right.
My age is 73, but that has nothing to do with it.
No.
And the idea for the concert came from a Connecticut concert.
Yes, it happened actually the anniversary of that just passed a couple of weeks ago. It was, in, I think, July 16th, if I remember correctly, where in 72 at Dillon Stadium, where we had the Grateful Dead play an afternoon show. And a couple of members of the Allman Brothers, Dickie Betts, which I have a great picture of Dickie and Jerry on stage playing guitar, which I think I've sent to you in the past, I believe. If not, I'll certainly send it off to you.
Please.
Yeah, I certainly will. And and I think J-Mo and I think it was Barry Oakley, also the bass player that came up and played and jammed with the Allman Brothers. I mean, jammed with the Dead. And I'm watching the show and a big fan of both artists. And I said, you know what? This really is magical. We should try to put it together. So right after that, Shelley and I started to talk to the members of the management of both bands and tried to figure out, can we put them together? And they said they would play together. And then we had to figure out where. Because nowhere in Connecticut was big enough to put them together.
Is that right?
And we were just Connecticut promoters. So we had to start searching around for a site to put the show.
Was there any moment before you started looking outside of Connecticut that you looked at some spots in Connecticut?
No, because Powder Ridge had just not happened a few years earlier.
Oh.
And it was very clear that the concept of a festival in Connecticut was not the friendly atmosphere that we would hope for.
Yeah.
So we definitely did not consider anywhere. You know, Rensselaer Field wasn't built yet. That might have been a good idea with 30,000, 40,000 people, who knows. But we knew it was much bigger, so we wanted to find a place that can hold more than 100,000 people. And because of Powder Ridge and all the bad publicity it got, and we decided we should not do it in Connecticut. So, you know, Shelley's from New York, and I grew up in Westchester County, so we said, you know, let's look at New York. Because that's what we knew second best besides Connecticut.
How did you come about finding Watkins Glen?
It was actually Shelley's idea. He said, let's look for a racetrack that can handle 100,000 people. And the closest racetrack that could draw 100,000 people was the Watkins Glen Grand Prix racetrack up in Watkins Glen, New York, which is a little burb of 1,300 people. And we went up there and met with them, and they go, oh, no problem. We can handle this. We handle 100,000 people all the time.
Oh.
So they were very open to it. It was really great. They were great people.
Very accommodating.
So you had the bands. So you have the Grateful Dead.
We had agreed with the Grateful Dead and the Allman Brothers that they would play. We needed a third act, and we had decided that we were going to get Leon Russell as the third act. Leon was a very good friend of ours. We had just played Leon Russell at the Boston Garden. And the very same night we had Leon Russell at the Boston Garden in September of 72, I had the Dead at the Boston Music Hall, which is now called the Wang Center, for two nights. So we had the bands meet each other, the artists meet each other. We thought it was a really great idea that we put Leon Russell on the show. So we put Leon Russell on the show, and then Jerry came back and said, wait a second, if this is in Watkins Glen, New York, it's sort of in the area of the band, and we don't think it's right for us to invade the band's home territory. And would somebody call Robbie Robertson and see if the band wants to play on the show?
What a thoughtful, nice human.
Yes.
Yeah, it was very nice. It was very nice until the band said yes, and then the Grateful Dead said, we don't want four acts on the show.
Oh.
And we said, okay, fine. Well, we've already given Leon Russell $37,500 to as a deposit on the show. If you don't want Leon on the show, how about giving them Leon, giving us $37,500?
And they said, you know what?
Leon Russell.
Yeah.
They didn't like that idea.
Right.
So Shelley and I, before the concert started, were already out $37,500.
Wow.
But so, you got the band.
Yeah.
Allman Brothers and the Grateful Dead on one bill.
Right.
Unbelievable.
That's huge.
It's really unbelievable.
Yep.
And the band really fit better than Leon Russell. And who's going to argue with Jerry Garcia anyway?
Right.
And so, it did make the show a better show. I do admit that. It was, nobody expected what we ended up doing, that's for sure. But we really thought we drew about 150,000 people.
How many people came?
600,000 people came.
Oh, boy. See, made your money back.
600,000.
And I was a child back then, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. How old were you? Like three?
23.
23.
Wow.
23.
I was going to play at 23.
And you know what? You had that mustache in full bloom at 23.
Yeah.
That thing was like...
That was rocking.
That was rocking.
That was rocking.
Oh, gosh. We're doing a Kickstarter campaign, and there's pictures of me at 23 years old, and people go, you used to look like that?
Don't you hate
that? I wanted to see, what? Screw you guys. Wait till you get old and see what you look like.
Right.
Kickstarter campaign for...
We're doing a documentary of Watkins Glen, because the only festival documentaries that have been on Netflix or HBO or any streaming service have been basically the Fire Festival or Woodstock 99, which are both gigantic disasters. And we felt it was important to show the good side of rock and roll festivals. So we just put together a Kickstarter campaign. It started yesterday. It's a good run through the month of August. And if you go on my Facebook page, you'll see it's on my Facebook page. And we're trying to raise money, besides the money that Shelley and I and a couple of producers are going to put in, but we want the public to put money in also. And they get rewards, as Kickstarter always gives rewards if you put money in. And we're going to put together a documentary of what was good about rock festivals and use Watkins Glen as the perfect example of how a rock festival went well and everything wasn't bad. And back in those days, the hippies were actually good people.
It's sad that no one's running with a bag full of money to produce this thing, because it's a great story.
Yeah.
It is. It's not culturally important like Woodstock. It doesn't have the brand that Woodstock had, and that's what we seem to be running into, that, Watkins Glen was great, biggest concert or festival of all time. One out of every 350,000 people in the country was actually at the festival.
Wow.
Which is really remarkable. One out of every 350 people, not 350,000, one out of every 350 people were at the festival. And it really is a remarkable thing that that happened, and the size of it was amazing. Yet, because there's no cultural phenomenon about it, it's hard to sell.
Huh. Man, the cultural phenomenon would be you had 600,000 people in one place, and there was no rioting.
Exactly.
Everybody had a good time.
It all worked.
Seems to be. It's sad that that's not a story.
Right?
Well, you know what goes on these days. Tragedy is hot and good news is cold.
Yep.
Was there any drama behind the scenes at the concert? I mean, there's when you have 600,000 and you're expecting 150,000, there has to be some...
Right.
Like, oh, we need
need more salad.
Oh, yeah. You know, if you go on to, there's a 6-minute video on my Facebook page. I don't know if you guys want to put it up on your page, but it's a Kickstarter thing. That's up to you guys. And I describe what happened, and J-Mo is in the video, and a number of other people are in the video. Derek Trucks is in the video because his uncle was in the band. You know, Bush Trucks was in the Allman Brothers. And the night before, the New York State Thruway was closed down by the New York State Police.
Oops.
And I thought the show would never happen. So that was the first piece of drama that happened. I was about to cancel the show, and thank God they reopened the Thruway before I got up on stage and said, sorry, we can't do the concert because the Thruway is closed because of all the people heading there.
So that they closed the highway. You already had how many people there?
200,000 were there already.
Wow. So 50,000 over what you expected. So what was the problem if they closed that down, that you couldn't get the bands in?
No, the ticket holders couldn't get in. I thought we'd have to give everybody their money back.
Oh. Yeah.
I said, okay, back to law school. I had just dropped out of law school 2 years earlier. So I said, oh, boy.
Back
to law school. And so that was terrible. And then because there were 600,000 people there, Sam Cutler, who was the manager of the Dead, who was also in this video, who just recently passed a few weeks ago, who was the manager of the Dead at the time, demanded a $25,000 bonus. And I looked at Sam and said, Sam, I'd happily give you $25,000. I'd give you $50,000 if these people had paid. But these people got in for free. I don't have their money.
Right.
He goes, well, too bad. The Dead aren't taking the stage without you giving us $25,000.
Damn.
So I gave him $25,000. I said, just do me a favor. Don't tell the Allman Brothers, the co-headliners, that I gave you $25,000 because the agreement I have is I have to pay you guys the same amount of money. So Sam goes, okay, just give me the $25,000.
And I'm guessing this is in a suitcase.
This was in a suitcase. Yep. It was 20s and 10s and 5s, so it took a lot of time to get the money. So it took like an hour and a half, 2 hours to just even count the money.
Wow. Unreal.
Damn.
I'm sorry. When I pay someone like $400, I'm counting it like 87 times.
Oh, yeah. I get $100. I count it over
again. I'm wetting my fingers. Right. I want to make sure they're not stuck together.
I'm listening to it.
Unreal.
Damn.
So they took the stage, and I'm telling you, 5 minutes after the Dead took the stage, Phil Walden, who's the manager of the Allman Brothers, walks into my trailer and goes, hey, I heard you gave $25,000 to the Grateful Dead. Now you owe me $25,000.
Oh, boy.
So, of course, I denied it. What are you talking about? I didn't give 20. There was no, check written or anything. It was cash.
They gave me $25,000. You heard it wrong.
They gave me $10,000 bars.
Yeah, really? Yeah, right.
They were good, too.
I do love those things. I go to Sam Cutler. I said, Sam, did you say anything? He goes, well, I might have mentioned it to him because they're my good friends.
Oh.
So I didn't have another $25,000 on me.
Oh, God.
I mean, that was a ton of money. Back then, it was like $1 million, $25,000.
Wow.
So the Allmans said they weren't going to take the stage. The Allmans were going to take the stage around 8 o'clock at night. So I had to, over the next 8 hours, figure out how I'm going to get $25,000. So I put, back then there was Ticketron, but there was also, in Connecticut, we didn't use Ticketron. We sold tickets in our ticket outlets. So I sent somebody back in a helicopter to Connecticut. He drove around to all the ticket outlets because we had Dillon Stadium shows on sale then, so we had a lot of cash in the ticket outlets.
This is the movie.
Yeah, seriously.
This is the movie.
Yep.
He spent all day Saturday, the day of the show, collecting $25,000. We put the guy back in a helicopter, flew him back up to upstate New York, and he has this giant shopping bag of cash on him, and he dumps it out on the table, and he forgot to take his dirty underwear out.
So
nobody wanted to count the money.
Right. Trust me, it's there. It's there.
And these were probably tidy whiteys back then.
Oh, no.
They were tidy whiteys.
So you can tell they're dirty.
Yes, you're you can.
But now they're brown.
Yep.
And yellow.
No.
So I looked at Shelly, and I said, Shelly, screw the band, the Allman Brothers. Have them come in. Let's not tell them about the underwear. And let's have them count the money.
Right. I know a secret.
Wow.
That's funny.
So, despite the fact we had to give them 25 grand, we did love the fact that they were just putting their hands all over really dirty. That was what you would call dirty money.
Filthy
no
money.
No question about it.
The filthy green stuff. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, nice.
So,
just that is the movie.
It's hilarious. That'd be a great
scene. The helicopter, the drama.
Great scene.
You know, we all know now you were able to come up with the money and the band makes the stage, but the drama building is can they get this money to this band, or are they going to have to tell these people, sorry,
oops,
you're not going to see the Allman Brothers?
Yep.
We weren't sure the Allman Brothers would not go on stage anyway, so we actually for a moment said, let's call their bluff, but we didn't have the guts. At 23 years
old,
I didn't have the guts.
Oh, my God. 23.
A sack of money and some dirty underwear.
There's this one picture where you see this massive crowd and there's a pole and there's people like climbing the pole.
Oh, wow.
The pole climbers.
Oh, that was so scary for us because we really had, we had no deaths and we really wanted to do it right. And these people started to climb the poles and the storm was coming in during the band set. We had to start begging people to come down off the poles because a rainstorm was coming in. And thankfully, they listened to us and got off the poles. They also were climbing on the scaffolding of the sound towers.
Wow.
And we were afraid the sound towers might tip over and fall on the crowd.
I'm all for getting a good view, but I'm afraid of heights.
Yeah,
I see this guy. He's sitting on top of a light pole.
Yeah, some folks have no fear.
He's sitting on the light on top of a light pole at a racetrack. This isn't like a 10-foot light pole. Yeah. This is This looks like 20, 25 feet.
Right.
Easy.
Plus, he may have smoked some courage.
Yeah, maybe.
Yep.
Maybe it was the early 70s.
Yeah, if he didn't, he got secondhand.
Seriously.
Yeah, I know this radio station sent a van there, and we have some audio of the broadcast from there, and I believe an interview with you.
We had a bunch of PLR people up there, and they helped set up what we call the pirate radio station that we secretly supported and gave news out and told people to do it. It was all done by PLR veterans.
Wow.
Now they're veterans. They were newbies back then. But PLR was very, very – Fox wasn't existing yet. So, but PLR was very, very involved in it.
Wow. There's this link, you should go to the radio station website and you should track this down. You should follow Jimmy's page, period.
Yep.
But if you don't, we'll have it on the radio station websites.
It's on my personal page today. Tomorrow it will be on my archives page because tomorrow is the anniversary of the concert itself. So it will be on my archives page tomorrow.
Just this picture of the highway. It's just over. It's done.
Yeah.
It's so
Kansas City
done.
Road. Yeah.
So done. Unbelievable. And then when everything was said and done, did you guys make any money?
Yes, we did make money. The final result was we were profitable, so it worked out very nicely.
So you achieved a lot of things that Woodstock didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, Woodstock lost money on the concert. They made money on the movie. The Dead would not let us shoot a movie. That was the problem with putting the documentary together. Nobody had phones back then to take films, and there was very little footage.
Yeah.
Thankfully, ABC, NBC, and CBS in New York covered a lot of the festival, so we went into their archives and got a lot of film from them.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
Is that the biggest concert you've done in your career?
It's the biggest concert in history.
Nice. CBS.
It is in history?
Yes.
Wow.
Biggest paid concert in history.
Nice. Yeah.
Wow. So that
and
would
nobody
be,
would
yes.
dare try 600,000 people again, that's for sure.
Right. No. Right. One and done. Yep.
Were there any problems with bathrooms or water or any of that stuff?
No, we gave free water. We did not charge for water, so everybody got water for free.
Cool.
Again, something that we tried to do righteously, and thankfully we did it that way. We had over 1,000 porta-johns, so we had enough porta-johns for people. So none of that really became a problem.
That's awesome.
Oh,
you guys did it right.
The massive crowd was the problem.
Yeah, and it worked out.
Yeah.
It's really unbelievable.
I'm talking to you today. I'm not in jail.
Exactly. It's always a good thing.
Well, happy anniversary.
Yes.
Tomorrow.
Yep.
50 years.
Thank you, guys.
Watkins Glen. And then a brilliant career after that. Before that and after that.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's still going.
I am a lucky guy. No question about it.
Mick Jagger just turned 80 yesterday. And, I mean, you hosted him for your 40th birthday party for a crowd of 700 people, maybe even less.
Yes, that was on August 12th. I actually, 2 days ago, bumped into Jon Bon Jovi and spoke to him for a while. He's in his 60s, which shocked the heck out of me. We talked for a while. And who's he standing next to? But Paul McCartney, who's 81.
Wow.
Wow. Where were you?
I was in Sag Harbor out in Long Island.
Oh.
And Robert Kraft, the owner of the Patriots, had a showing of Oppenheimer, and he invited his friends, and I just happened to be standing outside the movie theater, not knowing anything, with my girlfriend, and I was about three stores down. I didn't know what was going on, and she calls my phone and says, come here, don't you know Jon Bon Jovi? He's standing right next to me. So I ran over to John, and I said, hey, John, and who's he talking to but Paul McCartney,
wow.
Gwyneth Paltrow, Steven Spielberg, Brooke Shields. It was like
an
amazing sighting.
Wow.
Yeah. And little old me.
And did you get invited into the Oppenheimer?
No, it was over. They had left.
Oh, it was over.
Okay. Yeah.
It was over. And I'm a Jets fan, so I don't think Robert Kraft would have invited me anyway.
Oh, gotcha. Right, right. You can wait outside.
Well, in that moment.
Yes.
Go Bats.
Yes.
Awesome. All right. We'll talk to you next week. We're going to link all this stuff up, Watkins Glen, the 50th anniversary tomorrow, on the radio station websites and socials. Thank you, Jimmy. First, the police released a video of officers taking Dennis DJ Hernandez at his home in Bristol. Videos from three different officers' body cameras show Hernandez walking from a rear yard holding what appears to be a water bottle. Officers repeatedly tell him to get on the ground. One officer approaches from behind and uses a stun gun. Hernandez falls to the ground and is incapacitated and moaning.
Get down!
I'm not armed.
Get on the ground.
Get down on the ground.
Get on the ground.
Police say prior to taking Hernandez into custody.
The whole time starts singing.
It kept going.
He went down like
but he screams more?
No, I'm just saying, like, he went down, but, like, he just kept yelling.
Yeah, that's what I want. I want not the news people, what they did to it. I want the raw body camera.
Yes.
I want to know how long he went.
It's vibrato, too, for it is.
It's like, we can't turn him off.
Like a stuck car horn. Tap on the head. Nope, not working.
Get on the ground.
He's a tough guy. I would never want to fight him.
No.
It's funny how fast those things will turn the strongest person into the biggest pussy.
Oh, yeah. He went
just
down.
Mashed potatoes. Just went right down.
Yep. You're done.
Yep. Just down.
And what it normally does is first it just locks you up like you're a board.
Yeah.
So you fall over. You can't even put your hands out in front of you. You just go.
Yeah. Nope. Like just dropping a piece of plank. A plank. Thunk.
So just so you know. Before this happened, police called him on a cell phone, and he said, I'm not going, I'm armed,
yeah.
I'm going to shoot people.
Right.
So this is why they
You're all going down with me, yeah.
This is why they came with such force.
Yeah.
And, they were very worried. I mean, this is the stuff that cops do, and you think, this could be my last moment if I don't do this right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You have no idea. Yeah, hopefully gets the help he needs.
Then they get there and he's saying he's not armed. Like, what's real now? I don't know. And now you're telling me two different things.
And you're holding a water bottle. I don't know what's in that.
Yeah.
No idea.
Can be vodka.
I'm going to use this trusty taser.
Right. We'll find out.
I know what this does.
This makes you turn into an opera singer.
Oh!
Or soccer announcement. Go!
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
It sounds more like that, yeah.
No,
I want to just hear that.
Open your mouth and say ah.
Oh,
wow.
Oh, I'm gonna laugh. It's a sad story.
Yeah,
you know, the guy's got mental problems
again. Hopefully,
he's had a tough
life. Yeah,
his brother, his like that house had to be screwed up for both of them to come out so screwed up.
Yeah, it's a shame.
It is.
It's a shame.
But there's no denying it's funny to hear someone taste.
Yes, it is.
It's even, so you funny.
You could make a whole show just on that.
He's a tough guy. And then all of a sudden, yeah. And you know, as he's saying it, he's like, I can't help myself. I'm saying, yeah.
I went from famous singing, happy anniversary, happy anniversary. Oh, happy anniversary, happy anniversary. Put a fan in front of him. Oh!
That's what it sounds
yeah.
like.
Wow.
Trying to think of a song that matches up to.
Right.
No! I want to dance with somebody.
Whitney, Renee. Want to feel the heat with somebody.
Yeah. Come on, you can hear that one.
Amazing Grace.
Wow.
I keep hearing happy anniversary. The Flintstones or Cops.
It's such a random clip that like no one remembers but you.
Yeah.
What does that sound like? What does that sound like? Oh, it's right on the tip of my tongue, too. Yeah.
What else do you have? What are you seeing?
Well, I'm seeing like a toothbrush.
Okay.
Electric toothbrush.
Right.
Okay.
Right. When you're a little kid, you're sitting on the spin cycle of the washing machine?
Yeah. Yeah, right. You're on the washing machine and it's in the spin cycle.
Yeah.
Is there like a toothpaste commercial? That sings or something like that? Is there like a jingle?
Or maybe someone has a marital aid stuck somewhere.
That's possible, yes.
Play that again. Okay.
Yeah, you can get the vibration of the voice too. That works. Yeah,
could
works.
Be that.
Yeah.
Chaz and AJ. Oh.
Hello.
Gone.
Oh, and I just hung up on the next guy.
Oops.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, guy.
Another gone.
Hey, guy.
Chaz and AJ.
Hey, that sounds like the end of Guns N' Roses. What's the name of the song?
Don't cry.
Yeah, yeah, don't cry. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right, that works.
All right. Thank you.
That really long, annoying note he holds.
Get the guitar going.
Yeah.
It's memorable, though. That's
probably how they did it, too. They teased Axel. Here he goes. He's a little off key, but he's there.
That's it.
Oops.
Thank you.
Then it's AC/DC. That's funny.
Bob and Antonia.
Yep.
Hey.
You Later. Called us. What's up?
No, I'm just telling you the sounding of that, the Hernandez sound like Axl Rose, then Don't Cry.
Yep.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes. So that's two
right.
for that one.
Confirmed.
And you're absolutely correct.
Right.
Thank you.
Yep, welcome.
James and Seymour.
What's up? I texted in something. I think Phil's got it. It's basically a parody of Bohemian Rhapsody, but sung by the character Waluigi. from Mario. In the end, he goes like, "Any way the wind blow," and just keeps going.
Never heard that.
All right, he's looking it up right now. Thank you.
Any way the wind blows. What is he doing? The song is over. What a diva. While Luigi has places to be.
It's being electrocuted. That's funny.
Chaz and AJ. Hello.
Hello.
Hey.
Talk to us or what?
I want to use a taser on you right now. Please speak. So the first cop says crossfire.
Yep.
So there's cops on the other side.
He coming comes up behind.
Yep. He comes up from behind the house.
Yeah.
And, you know, DJ is like focused on all the cops. There's a lot of them.
Yep.
Out on the street.
Yeah.
And he's walking towards them. These cops come from around the back of the house.
Zeppo.
And
down he goes.
Ah.
He went down quick.
It was pretty much instant. Yeah.
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 Who is that character?
It's never not going to be funny. I don't mean him particularly.
No. Yeah.
Anybody who gets tased.
Make funny noises. They do.
Yeah.
They do. Who was that character? Oh, the coach from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. When he saw the nose light up. He pulls what's up.
Jennifer's been making fun of me because over the break, I moved a cover for our little fire pit.
Okay.
And there was a little baby copperhead in it.
Oh.
And so when I picked it up, I went, yeah. She has it down perfectly.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't expect to see something move.
No. Yeah, I would have screamed at a girl. No. Yeah. Oh, heavens.
To be fair, you've always found people getting tased very funny.
I do.
Entertaining, they are.
It is, because it's an uncontrollable sound.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do about
it. You'd rather not make it because you'd look cooler.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
It's not a sound you're like, yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Oh, I see the red target.
Stop it. That is the worst thing ever.
The last producer got that. Remember that, Phil?
That was Ed getting tased
riding
on the
lightning.
Air.
Yep.
Before we had lawyers and such.
Yep. Yeah, damn it. The good old days.
Damn it, the good old days.
Yep. That fun back then.
On a text message to a family member, Hernandez allegedly wrote, "UConn program is going to pay. I don't give a blank who gets caught in the crossfire. Not all shootings are bad. I'm realizing some are necessary for change to happen." Was this and other things that led people around him to contact authorities and say, "Yeah, you may want to take a look at this guy."
Yep. Thank you to those people.
Yeah, very much.
And what do you do with this guy now? You know, at some point, he's going to seem mentally okay.
Yeah.
But I just think that, you know, you're programmed over your entire life.
Yeah.
And you could get this guy to where he can, like, walk out and be among people. But I don't think he's ever going to be like, "Hey, everybody's great."
Exactly right.
You know?
That old me, I'm sorry about that.
That's a little time bomb going to be walking out the door at some point.
That old me's gone. Now I'm good now.
Yeah, I'm good now.
I was working things out in my life. Yeah. And I'm much better
now. I want to go over to ESPN. Hey, I'm sorry about that brick thing.
Yeah.
Oh, my bad.
Can I get lunch for you?
I understand why you exploited my brother's death.
Right.
I get it.
Yeah. My bad.
It's going to be a problem.
Yes, it is.
It's
lots of meds.
But good for those people to say something.
Seriously.
Tony Spira. paranormal researcher, director of the New England Society of Psychic Research, and curator, owner of the Warren Occult Museum in studio. Good morning.
Hey, Chaz. Hey, Jay. How are you guys?
Morning.
Good, thank you. So what happened with this Ouija board?
Well, a lot of things happened with the Ouija board, Chaz, as you probably know. Ouija board is, to me, probably one of the most dangerous items to play with. It's not the Ouija board, remember. It's not the Ouija board at all. That's just a piece of compressed wood with a plastic planchet. It's what you're doing with the Ouija board. You are using that as kind of a conduit, almost like a telephone to the other side. You're asking questions of the unknown realm of something you know nothing about. So when you put your hands on that planchet and you say, is there a spirit here? It's a way, it's a means for them to communicate with you by having that planchet move. They're able to manipulate that planchet and have it move.
Have you ever played with a Ouija board?
When I was young, when I was a kid, I think I used it once or twice.
Okay.
But, you know, it's like...
You wouldn't do it now?
I would never do it now.
Because you're a professional, so...
Wait. Well, you're right, I'm a professional, but the thing is, I know the dangers because... A lot, and I mean a lot of our cases.
But it seems like it could be good for your business to open a door and like be like, hey.
It's one of those things where
you get the cameras going, things fly across the room.
Right.
But it doesn't always work that way.
No,
sometimes it's very subtle.
Sometimes nothing happens. Sometimes you don't have any repercussions at all. It's like AJ in his scat pack. He races down the road and... Nothing happens, but that one time that the front tire blows out or somebody steps into the road, unlucky for both.
So it's a game of chance when you're playing with the Ouija board. It's not guaranteed something bad will happen.
It's like crossing I-95. Some people can run across and get by on a busy traffic day, and somebody else gets hit. It's a luck of the draw. The thing is, there are spirits out there. There are spirits out there that are waiting for you to invite them in.
Right.
Yeah.
They don't just come. They need to be invited in some fashion.
Might not believe in ghosts or all this stuff, but if you do that kind of like, hey, knock on wood.
Yeah, I do that.
Yeah. Then you're acknowledging that you believe there's something other than just words and people.
I totally do.
Right.
Yeah. Yep.
Right. So,
tell me about this Ouija board.
So we've had
mishap.
many cases of people who have had problems with the Ouija board, but one in particular that comes to mind is the case of a 13-year-old girl. And she was playing alone with the Ouija board. You don't need two people. It could be alone. Just have it on your lap or whatever.
Oh, brother. That's
and
even
you're
worse.
Sitting there and you say, is there a spirit here? So she started to communicate with a spirit that started to come to her and say that it liked her and she was nice and things like that.
All the things people want to hear when they're young.
Yeah. Yes. Right. And so she made a fatal error.
Right. That's true. I do want to hear that now.
I want
to hear people say, I like you.
I haven't played with that. You're pretty, man. Thanks, ghost.
So she asked the fatal question, and that question was, if you really are a spirit, prove it.
Oh, no.
Move something for me.
Oh, they hate
Turn on a light.
Yeah.
Move something for me. And you know how the spirit answered? Not now. I'll come later.
Oh.
So nothing happened at that moment, but when she went to bed that evening.
Oh, no.
20 minutes after she retired to bed, she started to feel the covers pulling away from her, like somebody was pulling them off of her.
Nope.
Then hands starting to grab her all over, especially around her neck. And she started to get squeezed very, very violently. And there was actually finger marks, impressions on her neck. And then sexually attacked.
Oh.
She's screaming for her mom. And her mother runs into the room. And this is really crazy. Her mother runs into the room, thinks she's having a nightmare, trying to calm her down.
Right. And that's what you would think. It was a horrible dream.
Yeah.
She yells at her mother, no, Ma, it's right behind you. It's right behind you, she says. The mother couldn't see it. So the mother doesn't know what to do because the girl is screaming, just bloody murder, you know. And so the mother runs, gets a Bible, runs back into the room, just opens the page up and starts reading scripture from the Bible.
Like random page.
Just any page, just trying to do something. She doesn't know
table
what to do.
Table of contents.
Dust in the wind, all we are is dust in the wind.
The table of contents.
AJ, I don't know about AJ.
Published by so-and-so.
I don't know. Put that whiskey down, AJ. So
that's Pat. But
the thing is,
no, put it down, AJ.
By the way, just to let you guys know that Chaz put and AJ, they put on a spread when your guests come. Can you have me another cocktail shrimp?
Absolutely.
I think. Yeah. So, she's reading from the Bible, scripture, and the Bible's torn from her hands, thrown up against the wall. And here's the crazy part. Thrown up against the wall by unseen hands. And as it hits the wall, it explodes like a bunch of confetti and falls to the floor. Oh, now the mother's like just
that
out
she
of
knows.
Her mind.
Yeah,
now
there's
she's
more
out of
to
mind.
It.
She
Time
calls,
to run.
She calls the husband. The husband runs.
He's still sleeping?
Wait. No, the husband wasn't sleeping. He's probably with his girlfriend. But no, the husband wasn't sleeping. He was working the night shift at a mill. Okay. And he comes home. He leaves early. He comes home. He doesn't know what to do. He says, I don't know what to tell you. And finally, they called...
But
priest.
You, so did you, like, this is this one of your cases?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Wow.
Call the priest.
So, wait, but now you talked to him.
Mm-hmm.
Did you talk to him, or was it Ed Warren?
Ed talked
was it
to
one,
him.
Ed case?
Ed
okay.
spoke to him. Yeah.
Ed and Lorraine Warren.
Yeah. And,
okay, but yeah. did Ed say, what did this guy think? When he got home, did he believe the wife, or did he think, oh, man, she's yep. in need of some
well,
attention?
Well, you remember, yeah. you always believe the wife.
Okay.
Because then it's a happy life, happy wife, right?
It gets really
so
demonic.
It's like she was out of her mind, and so was the daughter, so he kind of believed it. He didn't really know what to do, so he called the priest. And then the priest didn't know what to do either, and he called Ed because he knew about Ed and Lorraine. And Ed finally had the girl brought to his office. There was blessings done over her at the house. Didn't help much. But
yeah,
brought...
try to get that offer before she comes over to my office.
Right? Here's the weird part.
That's the fun. You could come. Leave the devil at home.
Leave
I want to come too, though.
Here's the really weird part, is that when Ed had her brought to his office to talk to her and try to interview her a little bit about what was going on, while he was talking to her, she screams at Ed, "It's right behind you. It's right behind you, Mr. Warren." And as she's saying that, this is what Ed saw. Bite marks appear on her. On her forearm with saliva oozing from the forearm.
Ew.
And her hair coming up like someone grabbed her by the hair, invisible hands, grabbed her by the hair and lifted her, and her toes come off the floor about an inch and a half, and she's screaming, and Ed's trying to do his blessings and things over her. There had to be like several exorcisms done over this young girl, 13 years old, to rid her of what
Has
she brought
in. Has
there
been a movie about this story yet?
No, but there should be, huh?
It seems like
there should be.
You know, the case files of the Warrens just packed with great movie.
This is so weird.
Plots.
All because of something made by Milton Bradley.
Yeah. How come no one sues Milton Bradley?
Seriously.
Actually, it's not Milton Bradley.
They're making conduits.
It's actually Parker Brothers.
Parker Brothers. Okay.
Parker Brothers.
Parker Brothers are evil.
Right. If
and
you
know,
sue McDonald's.
It's Parker Brothers. But you know the Ouija board is made by Parker Brothers? You know where it's originally made? Salem. Massachusetts.
Dun, dun, dun.
Stop.
Oh, wow.
Serious.
Wow.
Yeah. So you guys can hear more stories.
Are you serious about this?
Yeah. Oh, serious. Salem, Massachusetts.
They can barely make butter there. What are you talking about?
It says certified evil.
We have a third. Is this the third guy? Is this your
just noticing him now? Did you think he was a ghost this whole time?
Is this your backup guy? Is he the guy? He's the guy who really supplies the knowledge and everything?
I had to do that once you did the bad shrimp joke. Anyway.
So that was good. But so we're having the Phantasmicon, or we used to be called the Paracon. Now it's the Phantasmicon at Mohegan Sun on October 28th. We'll have a lot more stories, but we're also going to bring the artifacts from the museum, a lot of them this time.
The doll.
The doll. Most, we're going to bring the Annabelle doll, the movie Annabelle doll also, besides the real Annabelle doll, the shadow doll.
Who wants to see a movie about Barbie when you could see a movie about this doll?
Well, Barbie's evil, too.
That doll has spawned more movies than Barbie.
Anything.
Yeah. Seriously.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So we're going to have that. Like I said last year, we're going to invite you guys to come again. Last year, you didn't come. We hope you show up, even for a few minutes. I know Chaz was disenchanted.
Okay, I went to Waterbury.
He was disenchanted.
And I'm in a long line, and I'm with the vice president of this company. And Ed, I mean...
you were ghosted?
Tony walks right... Yeah, Ed gave me more attention, and he's dead. Tony walks by. I'm like, here comes Tony. Hold on. Hey, Tony. Hey, how you doing? Oh, Chaz, how you doing? Thanks for coming. Hey, can you do something about this? Like, we're in this long line. It's going to be about 40 minutes. He's like, no, I can't.
Have a good day. And you left me there.
I got the thing I got to do. I got the thing I got to take
go care of. Go grab your Bible.
I didn't mean that.
He was making a beeline for the
shrimp.
You
know why? Because I was really in a rush that day, and I was all combobulated.
No, no, it's
but
fine.
This time,
you're running an
this,
event. That's
but this,
fine.
But this time...
And it wasn't 40 minutes.
We'll treat you like VIPs.
It was 50
this
minutes.
Nice.
But
this time we'll treat you like VIPs.
No, no, that's fine. No. We're just going to go.
Yeah, so we're having celebrities. Besides you guys, we're having other celebrities.
Like who?
Yeah. Oh, you name it. We're having Jason Hawes. We're having Ronnie LeBlanc. We're having, he's a guy with the UFOs and Bigfoot and everything else.
Wow, wow.
We're having people from, we're having Eugenie Bondurant, and she's from The Conjuring 3.
Oh, wow.
She was one of the witchy women near the end of Conjuring 3. We got about eight
How many
or nine
movies
celebrities.
Have been made from the Warren's case file?
Seven, I believe.
Seven so far.
It's a lucky number.
Conjuring 1, 2, 3, 4 is going to be starting to film in September. Annabelle Creation, Annabelle Comes Home, and then The Nun and The Nun 2.
Do they have to pay you guys?
The Nun
like,
ones freak me out.
Pardon
me?
Do they have to pay you guys to use the Warren's name?
They pay us for the case files, yes.
Nice.
So each time that a movie is made, we get a flat rate.
I wish Ed and Lorraine lived to see the success of these.
Yeah, Lorraine saw Conjuring 1 and 2, you know. She was able to see those two. Ed saw none of them. Ed saw
she's
none.
In the first Conjuring.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, she's in the That's scene right. Where they're in the classroom. She's one of the students.
Phantasmacon.
Phantasmacon.
Dan Rivera came up with that. He's sitting in the other room there.
Hey, Dan.
He came up with that because he wanted to add horror into the paranormal. Paranormal genre and horror genre are two separate genres. But we're combining it this year, so we're going to have horror elements also within the Phantasmacon now.
Cool.
And so the quick story I wanted to tell you, that Conjuring 1 movie, when they invited Lorraine and I to come out and watch the filming.
Yeah.
And in the morning we come from the hotel, and one of the producers comes up to Lorraine and I and says, "You guys want to be in a movie?" And like, of course, we're going to, what are we going to say?
Yeah.
Of course we want to be in a movie.
Yeah, sure.
He goes, "Okay, Lorraine, you look great. Tone, you need a little work. Go to wardrobe and hair." So I go to wardrobe and hair. I'm 2 hours in wardrobe and hair.
Wow.
They put a whole can of hairspray on me to comb my hair to the side to make me look like 1970s.
Okay.
He put me in. He gives me size 48 pants that fall off. I said, "These are too big." He goes, "Cinch them." I go, "I can't cinch them." So the guy gives me pants. They're real tight now. He gives me small pants. Then he sends me back. He's like, "Go ahead." I sit in the audience next to Lorraine, and they got the filming starts, and the camera pans all over the room, comes towards Lorraine and I, and goes right over our heads, both of us. And I said, right after the scene's done, it was okay, take cut.
I said to Peter
Safran, who was one of the producers, I said, "Pete, am I going to be in the movie? Because, you know, I want to tell my friends I'm going to be in the movie." He goes, "Tone, you're in the movie, right? Didn't you see the camera?" I go, "Yeah." He goes, "You're in the movie." I go, "Okay, thanks."
All right.
I'm telling all my friends, "I'm in the movie.
Wait, you said the movie? I'm in the movie."
"Yeah. I'm in the movie. Wait till you see the part when I'm in the audience."
Right.
And so the movie comes, and I go to the screening in Warner Brothers at Burbank, California, and the head guy at the Warner Brothers, there's only like 6 people in the room. It's Lorraine, me, the producer, and the Perrin family.
Right, wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. And he goes, "Lorraine, I hope you like the movie." He goes, "You got a good cameo in there." And then he knows me, the guy, Walt Armada. He goes, "But Tone, I don't know if you made the cut." I said, "What are you talking about?"
Yeah. I told my friends.
"How did you get me out of that shot?
I'm right next to her.
They tightened the shot. They didn't even put my shoulder in."
Wow.
But I was in the movie. And I was so mad.
No, you weren't.
But I wasn't in the movie.
Your aura was around
set. I've been trying to be in every movie since.
Right. Your aura's around her.
It's not easy to get into.
You can see him in the widescreen version because there's a little more room.
Yeah. So, and I'm all day long, I'm walking around with this pound of hairspray.
Yeah.
It's
tight pants.
Bottoms.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and they gave me like a Nehru
Stupid
jacket.
Pants.
You know what I mean? It's unbelievable. Whoa. It's crazy. Makeup city, you know what I mean? And for nothing.
It's cool that Lorraine was in there.
She was cool.
And
she was good.
That's a real nod to her and Ed.
Absolutely. I wish Ed could have been in the movie because, you know, Ed always used to say to me after lectures, this is, I'm talking about in the 80s and stuff and early 90s. He'd say, "You know what would make a great movie?" I said, "What?" He'd say it like 10 times to me. I go, "What?" He said, "The Bewitched Farmhouse in Rhode Island." I said, "What do you mean, The Bewitched Farmhouse?" He said, the Harrisville, Rhode Island case, the farmhouse in Rhode Island, that's The Conjuring 1.
Oh, wow.
He had no idea that movie was going to be made.
Wow. Andre Derby's been holding for like 35 minutes to talk about his Ouija board story.
Oh.
Andre.
Hey.
Hey.
I'll try to make this as quick as
possible.
Hey,
no. No, we got to go. I just wanted to tell you. We got to go. Just so you know.
Yeah, you might not make the cut, man.
Your shoulders.
What kind of pants you wearing?
I'm going to talk to you tomorrow or something. We'll get that story out on the air.
All right. Basically similar to what happened there, but I didn't get haunted. But I asked the Ouija board some stuff. And
so you're going to tell me the story anyway?
Basically, yes.
No, that was it.
All right.
That's Ouija board talking.
Thank you, Andre.
I see it.
Okay. Nothing short when Tony comes by.
No.
No?
So warrens.net to get tickets. Warrens.net to get tickets. Or link to WPLR. And watch. Listen to WPLR because it's the greatest place.
Thank you, brother.
You're welcome.
Yeah, we're linked up to all things Tony Spira on the radio station website, WPLR.com, 95.9thefox.com. It's October 28th, but it's going to sell out. So yep. This is why kind of getting you to get your tickets now.
Do it.
This was the Jazz and AJ podcast. Thanks for getting through the whole damn thing. Subscribe now and please rate and review us. Unless you have terrible things to say, then please don't. Also, share this podcast with friends. Jazz and AJ in the Morning happens weekdays from 5:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. out of New Haven, Connecticut on the mighty 99.1 PLR.